is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. I've been watching what's been going on in France, or France, as they say in France, and there's a really big issue here that nobody's talking about. And nobody's talking about it because it's a series of inconvenient truths, largely for the Bush family, for George Herbert Walker Bush, for Jeb Bush, and for Shrub, for W. These three Bushes made huge mistakes with regard to our interactions and relationships with the Middle East that may have something to do with George Herbert Walker Bush ending up with the Carlyle Group and all the investments in Saudi Arabia and the Saudi royal family and all this kind of stuff that have led directly, in my opinion, to the murders at Charlie Hebdo yesterday in Paris. Now, I realize that sounds hyperbolic, you know, over the top. But let me give you the timeline. This is going to take some time here. I'm going to go through this. It may take 20, 30 minutes. I don't know. We'll see. But let me just step you through this stuff. We start in 1981. In 1981, Ronald Reagan is president. George Herbert Walker Bush is vice president. And Charlie Wilson, Republican in Congress, decides that, we need to help kick the Soviets out of Afghanistan. And so he appropriates $500 million. Now, keep in mind, Afghanistan has an annual GDP of only $2 billion. He appropriates $500 million to give to Osama bin Laden and the Mujahideen to throw the Soviets out, 1981. 1982, Maggie Thatcher has been the prime minister of England for 3 years, maybe four. I don't remember if she came to power in 78 or was elected in 78, came to power in 79. But right around, but in any case, in 82, she has successfully busted the coal miners union. She's privatizing things. She's becoming increasingly unpopular in the UK. She needs something to boost her popularity. So she has what she refers to as a small war, a little war with Argentina over the Falkland Islands. She wins. Her popularity goes through the roof. The next year, the Reagan administration, they're up for a real, this is 83, they're up for reelection in 84. And Reagan's popularity is sagging. We have one of the worst recessions in recent years, in 82 or 83. And Reagan decides he's got to have a small war, so he invades Grenada. And he gets reelected the next year in 84. George Herbert Walker Bush notices and says, oh, that's how you do it. Maggie Thatcher did it. Reagan did it. You have a little war, and you win your reelection. Okay, fast forward to 1989. George Herbert Walker Bush is now president. The Soviets leave Afghanistan. Osama bin Laden leaves Afghanistan and goes home to Saudi Arabia. Next year, 1990, George Herbert Walker Bush now is the second year of his presidency. He is massively unpopular with his own conservative base because he's proposed tax increases after he said, read my lips, no new taxes to get elected. And he's thinking, I got to do something to raise my popularity. What did Reagan do? What did Thatcher do? Oh, a little war. Let's have a little war. April Gillespie goes ahead and says to Saddam Hussein, you know, if you decide to invade Kuwait, it's not our problem. Saddam Hussein invades Kuwait. George Herbert Walker Bush has his little war. To make that little war happen, and it was a little war. It was 100 hours, a three-day war. To make that little war happen, we staged an Air Force base in Saudi Arabia, the Bandar bin Sultan Air Force Base. After the war, oh, and by the way, we got into this war with perjured testimony from a Kuwaiti princess who said that she had seen Iraqi troops throwing babies out of incubators in the hospitals in Kuwait. It was a lie. It was orchestrated by the Bush administration. It was testimony before Congress, perjured testimony. It is 1990. After Bush's small war, the first President Bush, he imposes sanctions on Iraq that will eventually kill 500,000 Iraqi children, because one of the main things that they said Iraq can't have anymore is chlorine, because you can make it into poison gas. But that also meant they couldn't purify their water. So everybody in Iraq is drinking water straight out of the Euphrates, and kids are getting diarrheal diseases and dying left and right. So that continues, by the way, through the Clinton administration. In 1992, Osama bin Laden, he's in Saudi Arabia. He's got nothing to do. He's going nuts. And he hates Saddam Hussein because Saddam Hussein is secular. He's a secular Muslim. He lets women go to college. He lets women work. He lets male doctors see, he lets female doctors see male patients. He lets women go to school. He lets women drive. They can show their elbows. They don't have to wear a hijab. Bin Laden is totally horrified by this. And so he gets together his merry band of former Mujahideen. He's now calling them Al-Qaeda. And he tries to invade Iraq to take down Saddam Hussein in 1992. The Saudi government says, wait a minute, we don't want that kind of instability in our region. They arrest Osama bin Laden and they deport him to Syria. Now, I had originally thought it was Somalia, but Shano found an intelligence brief this morning saying it was Syria. Sudan. Oh, Sudan. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, Sudan. Now, 1996, Osama bin Laden moves his operations to Afghanistan. He's got about 5,000 hardcore followers there. He's funded by Saudi Wahhabist billionaires. And he's mostly PO'd with us for having that Air Force base in Saudi Arabia, defiling the Holy Land. In 97, he begins preaching against the United States for that Air Force base. In fact, in 98, his rant is published in the New York Times, where he threatens the United States. Also in 98, the Project for a New American Century, signed off by Jeb Bush. Now we're to the second Bush. 1998, PNAC publishes an open letter to President Clinton saying, attack Iraq now, essentially, and saying that it's going to take a Pearl Harbor-like event to get the American people to sign off on invading Iraq. But we should still do it. It's signed by Jeb. It's signed by Wolfowitz. It's signed by Rumsfeld and a bunch of other neocons. 1999, Bill Clinton tries to kill bin Laden, fires missiles into August of 1998. Clinton sends cruise missiles, Operation Infinite Reach, and he misses Osama bin Laden by just 30 minutes. Republicans go to the floor of the House of Representatives to ridicule Bill Clinton for trying to kill Osama bin Laden, saying that he's trying to get people to stop talking about Monica Lewinsky, which is the real important issue before America. 1999, Clinton continues to try to kill bin Laden, multiple attempts. None of them are successful. 2000, the election is stolen by the Supreme Court and Jeb Bush down in Florida, knocking 90,000 African-Americans off the voting rolls, and W becomes president. 2001, Bush is viewed, early 2001, George W. Bush is viewed as an unpopular, illegitimate president. And he wants to do something about it. One of the problems that we have around in the United States, and particularly in Europe and Russia, is that heroin is becoming an epidemic. Why? Because the opium poppy crop in Afghanistan is huge. So he gives Afghanistan $40 million to burn the Taliban. George W. Bush gives the Taliban $40 million, says burn the poppy fields. They do. The price of heroin skyrockets. Addiction rates go down in Europe and Russia. Bush is sort of a hero for this. Okay, early 2001. That was March of 2001. And then, of course, 9/11 in September of 2001. After Bush had been repeatedly warned, look out for this, he completely ignored it. Cheney was in charge of the counterterrorism task force in February. He was put in charge of that in January of 2001. They never even met until September of 2001. And bang, 9/11 happens. Now it gets interesting. And I will continue this rant in about 4 minutes. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We're going through this little history lesson here to explain why France absolutely can't make the mistake, should not make the mistake that Bush, the Bush family, has made. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Carmen in Hamilton, Montana. Hey, Carmen, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You wanted to chime in on this?
Yes, I did, Tom. I remember what happened back in when we invaded Kuwait. There was a Kuwaiti ambassador's daughter. She was crying on the television saying, you know, that there was an invasion and they were dumping babies out of incubators.
Right.
And which was a total lie.
Yep.
And all the sappy Republicans started crying and started beating the drumbeat for war.
Right.
And of course, we had to go there to save the babies. But what was happening in 1958, a little known oil company called Zapata Oil out of Midland, Texas, had drilled 300 wells that they set on fire, not even 100 yards from the border of southern Iraq. Well, they did a dirty
trick. Wait a minute. Zapata Oil, owned by George Herbert Walker Bush, was drilling oil wells in southern Iraq?
Yes. 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 No, no. In northern Kuwait.
In northern Kuwait.
On the Iraqi border. But they drilled the wells. They whipstocked it and drilled at least 8 to 10 miles into southern Iraq's oil reserves.
Right. They were slant drilling. That was the complaint. They started that in 58, you said?
Yes, in 58. And that's when Kuwait became oil rich. And they were actually giving every man, woman, child, Bedouin tribesman who couldn't read or write $70,000 each. If your kid got sick in those days, they would fly you to Paris, France, because Kuwait was so oil rich. But they weren't even taking one drop of oil out of Kuwait. They were stealing it off from Iraq. Now, when the Ayatollah Khomeini had gotten 1,500 TOW missiles from Colonel North, and the October surprise happened, and Jimmy Carter was defeated because Ronald Reagan said, I'm going to get these prisoners out of Iran. And he said, I'm going to do it, and I'll have them out in so many days. Well, they elected Ronald Reagan, okay?
Right.
Well, what was really happening at that time, they had armed these Korean War tanks that were given to us, you know, back when I guess Mossadegh was deposed,
right.
And they had Korean War tanks, and Saddam had Vietnam War tanks, which could shoot farther and better. And so you stay away from the Republican Guard, or you get killed if you were an Iranian. All right. So with these new TOW missiles, when they had the Marines go over and show them how to use them and everything, they said, "Go ahead, we'll call the Republican Guard out, and you can wipe them out." Okay. So they did. The Republican Guard showed up at a battlefield and they wiped them out. And so they ran. So the elite Republican Guard who was left ran home to Saddam and they said, "Hey, they just wiped us out." So Saddam says it's impossible. They've got a Korean War tanks. There's no way they can take us on. They said, "Go back there and find out what happened." So they picked up plastic TOW missile parts and they read on them USMC Camp Pendleton, California. And he goes, "George Bush just screwed me over. I'm going to get him." And that night, one of his planes, one of his French Mirage jets was flying over our AO in the middle of the Gulf of Hormuz because he had the coordinates and he could fly over the top of our people without any molestation because he was an ally to George Bush. And what he'd done is he dipped the wings of that French Mirage jet and shot two missiles into the USS Stark and killed 79 sailors in the 1st Division, and nothing was done. That was just slapping George Bush's face for saying, "I know that you've been stealing our oil, and I know that you took us out with those TOW missiles."
Amazing. Carmen, thanks for a little bit of backstory. We'll be back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Just got an interesting call comment from Carmen, who's in Montana, who suggested, and I've got to fact check this before I go any farther, but before I assert it as an absolute fact. But he suggested that in 1958, Kuwait let a company called Zapata Oil slant drill from northern Kuwait into the oil fields of southern Iraq and start stealing Saddam Hussein's oil. At that time, it wasn't Saddam. Well, I guess it was Saddam Hussein at that point. I think he came in 54, but whatever. Zapata Oil was the oil company that was run by George Herbert Walker Bush back when he was an oil guy who was actually, the oil company was a front for the CIA. Zapata Oil also had an exploration well off the coast of Cuba during the Bay of Pigs operation, which was used to gather intelligence for the CIA about for the Bay of Pigs. So anyhow, this story might start in 1958 with the Bush family, but I got to fact check that. And so we'll see where that goes. So anyhow, we're up to 2001, and Bush is an unpopular, illegitimate president. Sandy Berger told me on this program years ago, we've got the audio someplace, that the Bush administration had been warned, look out for Osama bin Laden, look out for Al-Qaeda. And they were ignoring that because that was Clinton's thing, right? Bush gives the $40 million, so we get 9/11. All around the world, there were these solidarity marches after the day after 9/11. Just like in France right now. We are not afraid. We support the United States. In Tehran, Iran, they had a candlelight vigil. They said, we are all Americans now. In Iran. This was the day after 9/11. Afghanistan then makes an offer to the United States. We will arrest bin Laden and present him to a third country for trial along with any of his affiliated people. If you would like, the Taliban is offering this. I mean, keep in mind, the Bush administration had had a friendly relationship with the Taliban. They just given him, I think it was $40 million to burn the opium crop. So the Taliban says, you want bin Laden? We'll give him to you. And Bush says, nah, I need a war. He's a very unpopular president at that point. And so he goes to war with Afghanistan, a country that has a GDP of only $2 billion a year. We spend $1 trillion, $1,000 billion going to war with Afghanistan. This was, you know, Bush's reaction to 9/11 was exactly what the Project for New American Century memo called for. He said, hey, it's a Pearl Harbor event. Use it to invade Iraq. L. Paul Bremer then goes over to Iraq to try this libertarian experiment, firing the army, firing the police, shutting down half of the Iraqi economy that was run by state-owned industries, and waiting for the magic of the free market to work so that they can say, see, Milton Friedman is right. Didn't work out so well in Chile, but we can make it happen. Instead of the magic of the free market, what we got was looting of museums and revenge killings, and Don Rumsfeld goes on TV and says, democracy is messy. And as the Iraqi people realize that they've been screwed, this invasion is not working to their benefit. It's only working to the benefit of the oil barons. They begin to fight back. We call it an insurgency. We crack down brutally to stop that insurgency. We open the we take over the Abu Ghraib prison and start putting insurgents there. Meanwhile, in France, in 2007, as this is going on, during the Bush administration, W. Bush, a fellow by the name of Sherif Kouachi, and I'm sure I'm mispronouncing this. I don't know how to pronounce French, but this is one of the two guys who shot up Charlie Hebdo yesterday, the younger of the two brothers. He sees the pictures from Abu Ghraib and gets so upset that he hops on a plane to Damascus on his way to Iraq to join the insurgents killing Americans. He gets arrested because he misses his plane. He gets arrested in France. The French prosecute him, and he actually goes to prison for supporting terrorism for 18 months. Now we have destroyed two states, Iraq and Afghanistan. We have two failed states in the region. And Milton Friedman economics, libertarian economics, conservative economics of just let the magic of the free market work is utterly failed. And the failure of these two failed states is starting to spread around the region disastrously. So what do? We step up drone strikes against bad guys, right, which further inflames them. And this is continuing to this day. We are dealing with, see, now if Bush had responded to 9/11, W had responded to 9/11 by saying this is a crime, we're going to involve the police of the world, which I hope is what the French will do. It would have been the end of it. But instead, we did exactly what bin Laden wanted. He needed recruiting. His movement was going nowhere. They were leftover dead-enders from the war against the Soviets in Afghanistan. They had nothing to do, no place to go. He needed help. He needed the United States to make him into Lex Luthor. And George W. Bush wanted to be Superman. You can't be Superman without Lex Luthor. So George W. Bush did exactly what bin Laden predicted he would do and wanted him to do. And thus, today, the recruiting of right-wing hardcore Wahhabist extremists all over the world continues unabated. all as a consequence of horrible mistakes made largely for political purposes, largely to get reelected. The first Gulf War by George Herbert Walker Bush, the Afghan War by George W. Bush, and the Iraqi War by George W. Bush to get political capital. George W. Bush admitted this. If the French respond the way that the Bushes responded, we are going to have a world war. And you're going to have, 1.7 million or billion Muslims around the world, the vast majority of them. You know, in France, France has the most secular Muslim population in the world. Most Muslims in France are really not interested in either politics or even Islam. Seriously, Juan Cole wrote a great piece on this. And there's an argument that that's why these guys attacked Charlie Hebdo, was they wanted the French government to overreact the way that George W. Bush overreacted to 9/11 so that they could view themselves as victims and they could start recruiting. Please, France, don't
do it. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
So anyhow, that's my timeline. That's what I'm seeing right now. Curious your take on this stuff and if you think I'm missing anything. Tom Hartman here with you. And hey, can you text Nate? Hey, listen to the radio show right now. Thank you. We're gonna pick up your phone calls here. I've laid out my theory on this, and my theory is that a series of U.S. blunders that mostly have to do with Republican presidents. And frankly, I think, Bill Clinton was doing the right thing. The Republicans were trashing him for it when he was trying to stop bin Laden. But a series of Republican presidents with their little wars to get themselves reelected have led right to this moment. And France has to be very careful not to make the same mistake. They if they deal with this as a police issue rather than a government to government or France against the Muslim world war issue, then they will have avoided the mistakes that we made. Mark in Seattle. Hey, Mark, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was you were talking about George Bush back in the 50s.
I wasn't. A caller called in and said that Zapata Oil was drilling in northern Kuwait in 1958. I have yet to verify that.
All right. I was thinking farther back than that. Didn't Prescott Bush, the grandfather, in Lawrence Arabia divide all those tribal lands and make the America-friendly countries at the end of World War, I?
Yeah. Yeah, that was, the breaking up of the Ottoman Empire. I don't know that Prescott Bush had anything to do with it. I don't think he was a senator at that point.
Somewhere that he was involved in that.
Well, Brown Brothers Harriman was...
That goes back even farther of Bush meddling in that part of the country.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put that on the list to track down. If Prescott Bush was involved in carving up the tribal lands after World War One, geez, it's like, three generations of the Bush family now. Brought us this disaster. It's incredible. Mark, thank you for the call, and thanks for the lead. We are on it. Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Kevin, thanks for listening to KTRC. What's up?
The previous caller made my point about slant drilling from Kuwait, but I thought it had happened at a much later date and was facilitated by Halliburton, but you're going to research that. I have another aspect of how oil is involved in all of this, and that is why George Bush was giving money to the Taliban was to create stability in Afghanistan so that they could put in a pipeline out through Afghanistan and Pakistan to get super tanks up to the oil around the Aral Sea and Kyrgyzstan.
No, it was the pipeline, Kevin, was the TAPI pipeline, T-A-P-I, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, India. And it was to get oil out of Turkmenistan and transport it to India where it could fuel power plants that were being built by General Electric. Hello?
I also think that my own personal contribution theory is that he was going to give that pipeline to Kenneth Lay. Hence, Kenneth was coming out of the September meeting saying everything's going to be fine, even as his company folded Enron.
Oh, really?
There was those secret meetings, and Kenneth Lay, as the company was...
Enron.
And his stockholders, no, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. And I can't prove this. I feel like I don't have any facts to back this up. But it's just like Kenneth Lay had something up his sleeve.
Kenneth Lay played a big role in a lot of things. I mean, you know, for example, the banking disaster that we had a couple of years ago in 2007, 2008, the banking disaster was set up by Kenneth Lay. It was, you know, on Kenneth Lay's board of directors was Phil Graham's wife, Wendy, and she had loosened commodity trading rules, and then Phil Graham pushed through the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act in 99 that blew up Glass-Steagall, on behalf of Kenneth Lay.
Greg Palast reported that he's the one that developed a computer program to maximize their political donations, which mostly went to Republicans.
Oh, that's interesting. Kenneth Lay did that.
Democracy money can buy.
Yeah. I'll have to look it up. Kevin, thanks a lot for the call. Moving along here. Dan in Simpsonville, South Carolina. Hey, Dan, it says you wanted to disagree with me.
Well, I don't necessarily want to disagree with you. I'm sure all you're saying has truth somewhere, but you seem to gleam over a number of interesting things. You mentioned that Clinton was trying to kill bin Laden.
Yeah.
I mean, you said that they did it to the Republicans were accusing Clinton of doing it to, you know, cover for Monica Lewinsky. You know, the factory they bombed, they killed the janitor.
Right.
That night, there was nobody there, and they knew there was nobody there. That's the first thing. The second thing, the Navy SEALs had...
Well, hang on just a second, Dan. There were several cruise missile attempts. That blowing up the aspirin factory, that the intelligence that Clinton had at the time was that was actually a weapons factory, and blowing up a weapons factory is probably a good thing, especially if there's nobody in it. And yes, Republicans, I think it was Newt Gingrich, it might have been somebody else, went on the floor of the House of Representatives, I remember when it happened, and said, Bill Clinton's trying to wag the dog. He's trying to get us to pay attention to his attempts to throw missiles at some second-rate terrorist in Afghanistan, when we really need to be attending to the most important issue facing America, which is the Monica Lewinsky scandal, the fact that our president has committed a felony.
Well, I mean, but that's all true. But
that is true.
They bombed an empty factory. That's the truth.
They did. You don't know that it was empty. To the best of my knowledge, nobody went over there and looked at it. It was titularly an aspirin factory. And as I said, if you look into this, the Clinton administration at that time believed that it was a weapons factory, that bin Laden was planning an attack on the United States, and that factory had something to do with it. Read the actual history,
you know,
not just the right-wing talking points.
No, but President Bush also thought there was weapons of mass destruction, and that's what the intelligence...
Dan, I'm sorry, you've been watching too much Fox News. George W. Bush never thought there were weapons of mass destruction, and in fact, you go back and you read the writings of the people who were in his cabinet. Listen to Larry Wilkerson, who was the number two guy to Colin Powell. I mean, they were very skeptical about weapons of mass destruction, and the UN was repeatedly saying, no, there are no weapons of mass destruction. Bush was selling it with weapons of mass destruction. Rachel Maddow did a great half-hour or maybe hour-long documentary on this, The Selling of Iraq. I don't know if it's on the website or if it's on MSNBC, but it just blows up everything you just said, basically, and there's, you know, no shortage of other good reporting on it. Ken in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Ken.
Hi, I just wanted, I wasn't sure you knew that Zapata Oil, the Bush company, supplied the ships that carried the Cuban troops into the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah, you know what the name of those two ships were?
No.
The Houston and the Barbara J.
I think I do know that, yeah.
Barbara J. Bush was George Herbert Walker Bush's wife, and they lived in Houston. And which is also where Zapata Oil was headquartered, and they also ran a exploratory well drilling operation off the coast of Cuba that was actually a spy thing in the early 60s. And this was before George Herbert Walker Bush became head of the CIA. Zapata Oil was basically let's make George Bush rich and let's use this for the CIA. But yeah, I was familiar with that. Ken, thanks for the call. Excellent point. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff.
Well, if the Flint drilling, at least the latest one was, you always have to follow the money.
Right.
And the Bush administration, money was made off of everything. You know, Rumsfeld made money off the bird flu epidemic.
Yeah, you're right. He owned stock in Tamiflu, didn't he? Wasn't it Gilead Pharmaceuticals?
Yeah, it was Gilead, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, you just got to follow the money. And with what happened with Hussein in Kuwait, was Kuwait on former Iraqi land, was slant drilling into Iraq, taking out about $14 billion worth of oil. And the company that sold the equipment was the NSA Advisors company, former company, Brent Scowcroft.
Wow.
Somebody was always making money off everything the Bush people have done.
Right.
And, you know, just like, you know, Neil Bush and the testing and so forth. I mean, you look at 9/11, et cetera, et cetera. You always find somebody is making money off the crisis.
Right. And the rationale the right-wingers use for this is that if somebody's making money, that's the market at work and it's magic and it's wonderful and it always turns out for the best. And as you... Go ahead.
Yeah, and here, Brent Scowcroft's company created the crisis. So
what was the name of Brent Scowcroft's company?
I don't have that. That's one thing that's been harder to find. But it was a company he used to work for.
Huh. Okay. Jeff, thank you very much for the heads up on that. Boy, we're filling in the picture here. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Marty, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I was just thinking, I imagine the U.S. media will try to influence and push France into a militarized response to the shooting yesterday. And just think the U.S. war hawks are going to try to push them.
I'm sure John McCain and Lindsey Graham are going to be dancing that dance. I'm not sure Barack Obama will.
Well, hopefully Francois Hollande will not fall into that pitfall.
Yeah, I agree.
And go down that road.
I agree. Marty, thanks for your observations. We'll see. You know, I mean, I could be wrong. We'll see how it all plays out. But, oh, thank you, Shane. I think you're absolutely right. You are going to see John McCain and Lindsey Graham suddenly becoming experts on this stuff. And they're going to be all over, you know, on Sunday, I predict that you're going to have neocon Republicans on Meet the Republicans on NBC. Excuse me, Meet the Press on NBC. Marty, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So, current situation brought to you courtesy of the Bushies and Reagan. What do we do? Where do we go? And welcome back, Randy in Ottawa, Iowa. Hey, Randy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to comment that I agree with some of your earlier callers that it's all about money. And when you look at the influence of the Bushes over the last almost 100 years in politics and in business, and you look at the decisions you're talking about, that you call blunders, if you were sitting in their seat, those things wouldn't actually be blunders. That in some of those cases, like invading Iraq, their corporations like Carlyle and their interests as far as oil holdings are getting paid coming and going.
Billions of dollars. Billions of dollars,
and,
yeah. And George Herbert Walker Bush was a director of Carlyle, yeah.
And when you look at the Bush-Cheney energy policy, and the price of gas at the time was about $1.85, and we're nearing that price almost now. So this shows a major change in the disposition of the Saudis as to how they view the Bush-Cheney energy policy and how America has followed that. And I don't think that those things were blunders. I think it was all profit oriented and they're getting paid coming and going. And I applaud you for addressing such a complex issue. May I ask a question of not related?
Sure.
I watched your interview with Dan Sisson yesterday, and would it be possible to get those your interviews with him? I know this has been a series going through the book, as sequentially to where a guy could access this.
They're on our YouTube channel,
right? Or
Randy, we created a separate YouTube channel on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TomHartman. I think it is.
Okay, so that I can watch them all in sequence.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Hey, God bless you, Tom, and thanks.
Thanks, Randy. Good talking with you, and back at you. I'll take all the blessings I can get. Edmund in Hot Springs Nation, or the Hot Springs National something. Hot Springs. It scrolled off the screen there.
Hi, Tom.
Ed.
Hi, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
You mentioned about oil companies and interest stuff. Iraqi war for Kuwaiti oil or Iraqi oil, but you forget to mention the immense interest of defense industry that has a continuous cash flow for engaging in wars.
Oh yeah, this was the Iran-Iraq war, for example.
Yes, but I worked 7 years in Saudi Arabia. And I also worked in Texaco for years, about 40 years ago. The oil profits for oil companies are very good, but compared to defense industry, profit margin of defense industry, you know better than me, that when they make a hammer that sells for $800 or a stepladder aluminum that they sell for $8,000, and it is an extremely high profit industry.
You're absolutely right. We need to look at both those industries. You're absolutely right. Thank you, Edmund, for that contribution. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. George in Chicago. Hey, George.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Before I get to the deadly serious business, a brief happier note. I witnessed the first totally green traffic stop of my life on Michigan Avenue in Chicago about 10 days ago. A Tesla Electric blew a red light and was promptly pulled over by two Chicago bicycle officers.
It was like, nope. That's great.
No petroleum.
No petroleum.
Were consumed
what
in the
hood.
Execution of this traffic stop.
In right. So
a little bright light.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd just like to add a couple of items to your excellent timeline. The first being that in attempting to imitate Maggie Thatcher's example of whipping up a splendid little war, Ronald Reagan tried once and failed in Lebanon.
I forgot about that. And then he turned tail and ran after they killed 289?
Later,
yeah.
He made everybody forget about it by killing off more of God's children in Grenada.
Right.
And in addition, the timeline goes back so much farther because France was a pretty repressive and, in many cases, brutal colonial power in North Africa, in French Morocco, French Algeria,
yes,
Lebanon, in Iraq. And anybody who's made even a cursory study of the Algerian Civil War has to be appalled by the brutality and ruthlessness of the French in attempting to put down that rebellion, which was really a struggle for national independence. So the point is that because of their colonial involvement in all these places, all of them being Arabic and Muslim, there's a huge amount of superheated steam that still hasn't bled off from that region and a lot of resentment of the French.
Yeah, and these young men who are accused of being the shooters, their grandfather was from Algeria, wasn't he?
Right, and they're reaping the whirlwind
right.
of the fact that they were a colonial power for so long, and that gave the residents of those countries the right to become French citizens.
Yep.
So they're all settled throughout the country, but they're in ghettoized suburban housing developments where everything just festers and the resentment builds even more.
Yeah.
So this isn't going to be solved for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm with you. George, thank you very much for the call. Excellent point. Ed in Greenville, Texas. Hey, Ed.
Tom. I didn't know whether you had read the book American Dynasty by Kevin Phillips. Kevin Phillips was a Well, he was in the Reagan administration.
Yeah, he was a conservative historian who originally predicted the rise of the modern Republican Party, and he was right. And he's been on our program a number of times. I've talked to him about American Dynasty, but I have not read the book. What's the relevant point of it?
Well, I read the book. It's been out about 10 years, I guess, roughly. And your topic this morning, I went and dusted off the copy and brought it out and looked at it again. Anyway, it traces the family clear back to the Civil War. They made cannons for both sides. The Bush family have been war profiteers for a long time.
Is this the Bush family or the Prescott family?
Well, it was Bush, I believe. I'd have to go back through the book again, dust it off and reread it. But then the Walker side.
I'm sorry, that's what I was thinking of, not the Prescott. Prescott was the first name of, Anyhow, go ahead.
Right. The Walker side is, I think, Daddy Bush's grandmother, I believe.
Yes.
Anyway, they're the banking side. So, you know, the combination of war profiteering and banking, and everybody thinks that the Bushes are deep into oil. They don't know their tail from a hole in the ground about oil. Daddy Bush, after World War II, they sent him to Texas so he could get into something, and he got into it all right. Anyway, like I say, the Bush, they're war profiteers from forever, I guess.
Yeah,
people need to wake up and realize what they're dealing with.
Amazing stuff, Ed. I wish I had that book handy. I would dig it out too. Thank you for the heads up on that one too. We're all filling in this picture. It's amazing. Doug in Mifflin, Pennsylvania. Hey, Doug.
Hi, Tom. One of your previous callers brought up two words that just get my blood boiling, and those are Newt Gingrich. When they bombed that factory, that aspirin factory. If you read the 9/11 Commission report, Newt Gingrich was one of the guys that was in on the meeting when they were discussing going ahead with this mission. And they all agreed that they should go ahead with this. And then when it didn't turn out so good, that's when Gingrich went on the floor and began this Monica Lewinsky wag the dog little tail that he spun. And that's at that point, that's when I really got angry about Newt Gingrich and the sneaky way that he went about everything when it came to Clinton. Not that I'm a big Clinton fan. I was totally disgusted by, you know, I don't really care what the average guy does, you know, out of marriage. But for the President of the United States, you know, to carry on like that really disgusted me. But nobody disgusted me more than Newt Gingrich. And he was in on that meeting, and he saw the intelligence that Clinton saw and that our defense secretary saw, and everybody agreed that it was a good idea to go ahead with that mission.
Yeah, because they thought that was a weapons factory.
They absolutely did, and all the intelligence pointed to it. And all I'm saying is Newt Gingrich has as much or more responsibility for that as anyone else does.
Amazing. Doug, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Cynthia, in Placentia, California, we have just 1 minute to the end of the hour. Cynthia, it's yours.
I'm just, I read a book. It was called Desert Queen. It was the biography of Gertrude Bell, and it was with the British in Egypt. They really set up Iraq. And she...
After World War One,
Lawrence of Arabia was in Egypt, and she was down there. And this is at the turn of the last century, before World War One.
Uh-huh.
And so that is a very, it gives you the history of what happened with Iraq. And that's why in World War Two there was an interest there with the Germans, Rommel, and Montgomery.
Right.
And Israel, too. The British were heavily, well, all the great powers were
right
over there.
Everybody wanted Iraq and Iran because they had all that oil.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you can't have wars without oil.
Right. Right. And you can't have oil without wars, apparently. I mean, this is the great tragedy of our time. Cynthia, thank you for sharing that, adding that to our conversation. I appreciate it. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. Mike Papatonio is actually going to drop by, or is he in our third hour? Yeah, okay. Mike Papatonio is next. Sherrod Brown is going to be with us in our third hour, and we will continue this conversation as we go through the next 2 hours of the program. Please stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A couple of quick headlines. Bill de Blasio refuses to apologize to the New York Police Department. Barbara Boxer says she's not going to run for the Senate again in 2016. That's interesting. That said, however, with us now is Mike Papantonio, America's lawyer, host of Ring of Fire Radio. And hey, Pap, how you doing?
Tom, how are you?
I'm great. I just did a basically hour-long rant about my take on this whole thing in France and how three generations of the Bush family set this disaster up. I'm curious your take on it.
Well, I think that's a big part of it. I mean, you can't torture people and then have generation after generation hear that Uncle Mohammed was tortured and killed in Gitmo and not have some sense that it's wrong and not be angry about it. But I look at this a little bit differently. I'm more lined up with what Bill Maher has been saying for an awful long time, and that is maybe the moderates within the broad religion need to stop apologizing, and they need to take control of the religion the same way that the liberals and moderates in the United States need to take care of the fringe within the Catholic Church and within the Protestant Church. For some reason, liberals are so sketchy where it comes to saying the obvious that there is a problem here. And what I mean by that, Tom, is, for example, I grew up mostly going to the Methodist churches in the South. And then at some point, the Methodist churches started sounding an awful like the evangelical fundamental Southern Baptist. And I said, well, that's not for me anymore. So what I did is I chose to step outside that structure and say, if I can't make it better, then I need to adjust. And I think there are plenty of people that should pay attention to the idea that there's only so many times you can have the apologist for all of this get on the air and say, gee whiz, this isn't really who we are. It's a big problem, and we cannot just not talk about it. This should not be off limits to talk about the fact that when the Catholics need to do some reconsideration, as this new Pope is doing, he's doing a brilliant job changing the brand. When we start seeing something go wrong, we have to do more than simply talk about it. We have to say, A, we're not going to send them any money. B, maybe I don't need to go to that mosque. Maybe I need to build out something that's more in line with what I really believe. You see, religion is all about the structure, Tom. It's all about this infrastructure that's built. That doesn't have anything to do with faith. My faith is not different, for example, because I don't go to the Methodist church that I think is becoming an example of a Southern Baptist evangelical church. My faith is the same. I simply choose not to work within that structure. And at some point, people have to say something is wrong with the structure of the Muslim religion when we start hearing these over and over and over again. Where do we hear the stories about ISIS beheadings? It's a Muslim story. Where do we hear a story like we heard just yesterday? It's a Muslim story. So the people who want to do the right thing and take that wonderful religion that has so much potential and save it have got to step outside of it and say the structure is not working. We need to do something differently. I know Bill Maher got so much criticism for this, for saying this. You know, he was attacked by virtually everybody because he said what was on his mind. But the truth is, he was right. When freedom of speech becomes a crime, because, you know, the Muhammad is depicted in a certain way that they're not happy with. That's unacceptable. When women are stoned to death because they do something wrong, or you know, are women are treated in a way that they're half the value of a man, something's wrong with that. And so the Muslims who really care about Islam and want to really do something meaningful have got to step outside that structure, just like I'm talking about, the same way I stepped outside the Methodist Church. I didn't lose my faith, but nevertheless, I felt like the infrastructure did not fit. That's the broader problem, and for some reason, liberals are so damned afraid to talk about it.
I think that's a good chunk of the story. We make it very difficult for those moderate Muslims when, A, we sponsor the Saudis, who have been sponsoring Wahhabists who publish books saying that Jews eat the blood of Muslims for with matzah, etc. And they've been exporting this stuff. It's the Saudis who were helping to fund 9/11. It was the Saudis who were funding bin Laden. Well, it was us funding bin Laden in Afghanistan originally. It was originally called Al-Qaeda, was originally called the Mujahideen. We make it very difficult when we invade two Muslim countries and basically turn them into failed states. And in fact, you know, one of these two guys who did the apparently did the shooting in 2008 when he saw the 2007 when he saw the pictures of out of Abu Ghraib, that was when he hopped on a plane to go to Iraq to fight against the Americans. He served 18 months in jail in France for that. So when our trashing Muslims and our supporting Muslim extremism by supporting Saudi Arabia is ongoing, I don't think that you can say that the entire problem is within the Islamic faith.
No, no, Tom, it's not within the Islamic faith. It is. Look, there's so many wonderful parts of that religion. It's a wonderful religion from top to bottom in so many ways. Just like you know, some parts of Christianity is wonderful parts of that religion, but when you say I choose not to adopt the part of that religion of the angry God that we find in the Old Testament, that's not the God that I'm suitable with. So you step outside that and say, to have my faith, do I really need this infrastructure, this thing that we're building that is called the Muslim religion that you might practice at the mosque, or the Catholic religion that you might practice at the at the cathedral down the road?
I'm with you. I'm not disagreeing with you, Pep. I'm just all I'm arguing is that I think the reason why Bill Maher got attacked is because he did not put it in a somewhat larger frame. That it was basically blaming the victims. I would say a lot of Muslims are victims of. In fact, the vast majority of Muslim violence has been directed against Muslims.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. And you started this conversation out exactly where it should have been. Is if we, you and I, were third generation, hearing that generation number one and generation number two had been subject to what the type of thing that we saw with the way that the Bushes handled the problem down in Gitmo, we would be very militant. There's no question. I often think of the what happened with Jews coming out of the Second World War. Had you known that story to this day, I would be extremely militant. I would be part of that militant arm of the Jewish movement. When you hear the stories. So to say that there's not some justification for it, you're absolutely correct. But to change it.
A justification is the wrong word. Maybe explanation.
Explanation, perhaps. Yeah. That may be the better word. But at the end of all this analysis, the people who really care have got to save this religion that is worth saving.
They do, and a lot of them are working really hard. We've had a bunch of people from CARE on the program, and you know, the Council on Islamic American Relations or American Islamic Relations and whatnot. Just like you've got in Christianity, you've got the left wing, you know, the Church of Christ, which is pushing back against the right wing Christian radicals who are killing abortion doctors and you know, bombing the Olympics and all this other stuff. I mean, Eric Rudolph was our guy, and he was a Christian terrorist.
Well, no question. And think of what it did to the religion of Christianity when we had abortion bombers abortion bombers blowing up churches and murdering abortion doctors. We all that cared about a religion said, no, I have my faith, but I can't be part of that. So we tried to do something to restructure that in some kind of small way. So I think there's an answer to it, but it doesn't begin by every time this happens, this repetitive, I'm sorry, this isn't who we are. There has to be some picture that it isn't who they are.
Yeah,
and that's possible.
Point.
That's possible.
Good point. Mike Papantonio, America's lawyer and host of Ring of Fire Radio, ringoffireradio.com. Always great talking with you, Pap.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always thought-provoking and always insightful. We will be back. It's 15 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
America's lawyer, Mike Papantonio, ringoffireradio.com. You can read all about it. You know, we never did a Pap. You still here?
Yes, I am.
We never did get to payday lenders or Boehner's revenge. I saw that Boehner's revenge story, and I thought this is like the purges that Hitler was doing in 34 and 35. I mean,
well, no question about it.
Bizarre.
I think what's so interesting about it is now we have that Republicans that are feeling empowered. As a matter of fact, we're seeing statements to the effect that, gee whiz, we don't need these fringe now, so we're the establishment Republicans. We're going to step on the fringe. The truth is, the only way they held any power for so long is the right-wing fringe. And they viewed people like Daniel Webster from Florida as that fringe who was trying to run against Boehner and
right.
take over some and change the structure of the Republican Party, I think probably for the worst, quite frankly.
Sure.
But I think it's interesting that they've been there 2 days and all we've seen is a food fight. And it's almost like you're watching Home Alone and there are no adults in the house. And so what we're going to start seeing as this progresses is it's just simply going to get worse. I think I think what's going to end up happening is they don't have anything really meaningful to do right now within their party, except to try to purge the party of the Tea Partiers.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting to keep an eye on this one. By the way, what's coming up this Sunday at noon on Free Speech TV on Ring of Fire TV?
Yeah, so I've got Howard Nations. He's going to talk about how there's now a new debtor's prison, how we throw people in prison for that. Richard Eskow is going to be here talking about Wall Street's big gifts of 2015. They are startling. I'm going to have Chris Paulus talking about how Chamber of Commerce and Wall Street is trying to do away with whistleblower cases so nobody looks over their shoulder. I'm going to have Les Leopold talking about the wealth inequality in America and how it's hurting us now more than ever before because there's no money at the bottom to move its way up. And because of that, we have 50 million Americans living in poverty. 16 million of them are children. We have 50,000 vets coming home with nowhere that are homeless. Well, I mean, they have no place to live because we've taken all the money and we've moved it to that very top, nothing down at the bottom. And that kills an economy because nothing is there to push the engine of capitalism. So, I think we've got a great show as usual. We're trying to talk about stories that only you and only people like you talk about. Ed Schultz talks about them, a handful of other people do. But the truth is, there's stories that are important that most Americans simply don't get to hear.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. We still have a minute until the break. You want to?
Well, yeah, I want to tell you this. I know that it sounded like I just threw some bombs on the topic of what happened over in France.
I thought it was a very reasonable statement.
Well, I'm glad. I think it's. I was very disappointed to hear the criticism that Bill Maher got on this because Bill Maher is a true liberal, and he does believe that there are freedoms that we can't give waivers to. There's no waiver when we want to criticize the Pope. There should be no, and nobody should be bombed or shot for that, or Mohammed, whatever it may be. We have to be able to talk. That is what that
I think.
Is
part
what,
of the blowback to Bill Maher is that he is a reflexive atheist, and anything that has to do with religion, he trashes. You acknowledge that there can be some good in religion. Bill Maher, I don't think would do that. Although I can't speak for Bill. Anyway,
I have my faith. I have my faith.
Me too. Mike Papantonio, America's lawyer, host of Ring of Fire TV right here on Free Speech TV, Sunday at noon, and replays throughout the week. Check your listings. Thank you, Pap.
Thank you, Tom.
It's always great seeing you. We'll be back. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And I think, you know, we've got a lot of national processing of all this stuff to do. Danette in Hinesville, Georgia, you wanted to comment on my comments and Mike Papantonio's comments about Islam and what's going on.
Yes, I do. You know, it's been really, one, I'm really sad that, you know, we've had another terrorist attack. And of course, our heart goes out to the families, of the victims. That being said, we are having a conversation about a group of people as if they have the same beliefs that we do. And they don't. They are a theocracy. Their entire governmental structure is built on the Quran and their religion. It is not.
Well, it depends on the country, Danette. There are secular Muslim states, and there are
and,
religious.
I do understand that, but what I'm saying is that the people that are committing these acts don't believe in freedom of speech.
Sure.
They don't believe in women having rights. I mean, they're going against what the Quran says in many, many ways, but it's kind of like a parent trying to rationalize with a 5-year-old that is having a tantrum.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, I agree that they're theocrats, that these people want theocracies. They're, you know, much like Massachusetts at the founding of this country.
Right. They do. And here's the other thing that really bothers me is, yes, we live in a society where freedom of speech is really important. But it amazes me how no one wants to be responsible for what they say or what they print. And when you are disrespectful to someone else's religion, there's going to be, or when you say things and you do things, there's consequences for everything. For every action, there's an equal, or at least in science, there's an equal and opposite reaction, right? So we cannot, go around doing the blasphemous, disrespectful things like what this paper was doing in France, because it disrespects people, and we've got crazy people, whether it is Muslims, whether it is right-wing white extremists, or whether it is angry black looters. Do you know what I'm saying? People sometimes are pushed to the edge, and they do really horrible things. And I think that sometimes we need to be mindful. Treat people the way you want to be treated. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's just, sometimes I think we've just gone over the edge when it comes to freedom of speech. People should be able to say what they want to say. But should you really? You know what I mean? I could cuss my husband up one side of his body and down the other, but is that going to endear him to me? No, it's not. And I just think that the blatant disrespect, it's one thing to say that you don't support Islam or that you don't believe in it or that you don't that you don't agree with what it stands for, but it's completely another to just defame and defile what someone else believes is sacred, and we've lost respect.
Well, remember when there was the artist? This is when I think Rudy Giuliani was mayor of New York, who did an exhibition in one of the art galleries in New York City, where he had a crucifix in a glass of urine or a bottle of urine, and all the Catholics got hysterical about it. There were all these calls, and they shut down the exhibit or whatever you call it, you know, in an art gallery. And so although nobody got shot over that, but I get your point, Danette. It is a delicate balancing act. You know, where do you go? How do you how far do you go in expressing contempt for somebody else's beliefs? And
my question, Tom, really is, so one, you and Mike, and I love him because he's a straight shooter, right?
Yeah.
You guys started the conversation with the fact that our hands are not clean.
right? We go around as a country wrecking havoc all over the planet. And then we're shocked. Oh, my gosh. Why would you want to hurt us? Well, because you're evil. We do horrible, horrible things. And, you know, so.
Oh, we do a lot of good, too, Jeanette. Let's not paint this country with a single brush.
But, I mean, come on now. I'm sorry, but I'm an African-American, and we're dealing with, you know, hundreds of years of mistreatment of American citizens, people that are not even considered American, right?
Right.
And so I'm just looking at it from a certain cultural experience, and I'm looking at the history. Yes, we do really great things, but, you know, sometimes those great things are blacked out by the really bad things that we do. And so all I wanted to say was, if we leave people alone and leave them to their own devices, they wouldn't be over here bothering us if we weren't bothering them, right? If we weren't infringing upon them, saying that their way of life is wrong, because all they're doing is retaliating and responding to how we meddle in their affairs, is all that I'm saying. And I just live by treat people the way you want to be treated. I don't want people disrespecting what I believe. And really, what Muslims believe have anything to do with the daily life in France?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It didn't affect them.
Yeah.
So why write that horrible stuff? And now it's affecting you.
Well, see, I think that this was a recruiting drive. And in fact, it's already starting to work. There have been 3 attacks on mosques overnight in France. And, you know, bombings and shootings and things. Nobody's been killed, but the buildings have been damaged now, 3 of them. And that is going to lead to a successful recruiting effort on the part of the fundamentalists, the right wing, the hardcore right wing Muslims in France, and which is exactly, presumably, exactly what these guys wanted. It's exactly what bin Laden wanted with 9/11. He wanted America to overreact so he could be, you know, so Muslims could play the victim and he could recruit too. And it's like we got to be careful of buying into it, playing into those things as well. Jeanette, thank you for sharing your perspective with us.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be right back with more of my thoughts, your thoughts, and general commentary on the state of the world with regard to France. The bad and the very, very ithyphallically ugly. The good. Denmark. That Nordic nation is making huge strides toward a sustainable energy future. Last year, they set a world record for wind power, obtaining almost 40% of the entire country's power from wind. According to that country's climate minister, this puts Denmark well on the way to its national goal of cutting greenhouse gas emissions by 40% of 1990 levels by 2020. Despite what you might hear on Fox so-called news, the green energy revolution is real. Countries like Denmark are proving that every single day. Keep up the great work, Danes. The bad. Tom McInerney. In an appearance on Fox and Friends on Wednesday, the retired Air Force general turned Fox News contributor said communists like New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio are making it easier for terrorists to attack the United States. Seriously, check it out.
I'm getting a lot of tweets from people from Paris who said most cops choose not even to carry a gun. That, thankfully, is not the case in New York.
Thankfully. But with the current leadership in New York, and I'm referring to the mayor, the communist mayor you have up there, that may change. So I think that the world better wake up.
Right. I don't know, Tom. Last time I checked, the worst terrorist attack in American history happened while a Republican was mayor of New York City and president of the United States. But I guess when you're shamelessly trying to politicize a tragedy, pesky things like facts and consistency don't really matter. And the very, very ugly Governor Rick Snyder. The Michigan governor is considering making it legal for domestic abusers to carry concealed firearms. Seriously, not kidding. Currently, Michigan residents who get domestic violence-related restraining orders cannot carry concealed weapons. But Michigan's Senate Bill 789, which passed the state legislature late last month, would change all that and give concealed carry rights to those abusers who are legally allowed to carry firearms. What could possibly go wrong? I guess it's up to Republican Governor of Michigan Rick Snyder to decide, and that is very, very ugly and scary. It's bizarre. Anyhow, Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Kathy, thanks for listening to Mike. What's on your mind?
Oh, hi. I guess I'm kind of repeating what someone else said. The comment is just, you know, just because we have a right to do something doesn't make it right to do it. And I raised my children with every single day before they went to school, I said, we never have fun or get ahead at the expense of another person. And sometimes people have to have some common sense in why would any cartoonist person, newspaper, whatever, have so little to do that they would spend their time trying to say something negative about the head of someone's religion. I mean, you could have good comments about things and discussions, but fun making and doing the kind of cartooning of what they were doing to Muhammad, it just doesn't make any good sense.
Kathy, that's the job of satire. Back in the old days when we had kings and queens, generally speaking, if somebody brought the king information that contradicted his worldview or that suggested that he should change his mind about something, he would cut their heads off. There was one exception to that, and that was the court jester. The court jester for 1,000 years in European serfdom, the court jester was the one person who could say anything in the presence of the king and never have his head removed. And that was a really important release valve, a safety valve, for a king and a kingdom to know what the people were really thinking, the consequences of his actions, what was really going on. And the court jester had to do it in a way so as not to just, you know, blow the king away, had to do it in a way that was, quote, funny. Satire is one of the most important ways that we call out hypocrisy. And Charlie Hebdo, this magazine in France, has called out Catholics. They've called out Jews. They've called out Muslims. They basically make jokes about all religions. And I think that there are parts of all these religions that are worthy of ridicule, frankly. What's wrong with that? Just because, you know, I understand your point. You know, if you can't say something nice about somebody, don't say anything at all, was my dad's phrase. And in terms of interpersonal relationships, fine. But, I mean, I think that we've got, religions that in the name of their religion or of the tribalism of their religion are doing some really nasty stuff from the Catholics doing it, Jews doing it in the regard to the state of Israel, the Muslims doing it all. People should be able to talk back to these things and say, you know, I disagree with that. And doing it with satire is actually one of the gentlest ways to do it, I believe.
May I just ask a question regarding what you just said?
Yes.
Don't you see a difference between maybe having a satire about what people within a religion are doing rather than somebody attacking and belittling the head of a religion? There seems to be a big difference to me in that, say, in our country, I almost think that the GOP is trying to have a theocracy. But I don't want to get out in a different point, but to me, there's a difference between I don't agree with your wanting to kill people over a difference of opinion, but that doesn't mean that you belittle the head of that religion like it would be belittling Jesus. We wouldn't like it.
Right. A lot of people were offended, Catholic.
Is a totally, to me, a different thing
than
talking about in an intelligent way belittling what any religion does.
Kathy, I think, for example, when it was the Christ in Urine exhibit in New York City back a couple of decades ago, and Catholics in particular, because it was a crucifix, really, really got upset about this. And, the artist got trashed and got death threats and all kinds of stuff. The difference, by and large, was that Catholics all around the country didn't, start shooting people up. But on the other hand, Catholics around the United States have not been rounded up by the thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and tortured and beaten. They haven't been murdered by the hundreds of thousands, as we have done with Muslims in the Middle East. They haven't been imprisoned by the tens of thousands. They haven't been subjected to Abu Ghraib or CIA black sites. So, you know, there's a certain edge here right now that is the consequence, I think, of many of our policies and European policies, as well as policies of some of the more secular despots in the Middle East who have been fanning these flames. It's not a simple solution, but I think that in any way at all, blaming this magazine for publishing these cartoons, blaming these guys for their own death, I respectfully disagree. I got to move along, Kathy, but thank you for your call. I understand what you're saying. I can't go there. Daniel in Bethel, Connecticut. Hey, Daniel, what's up?
Yes, hello, Tom. I love the show, by the way. I've been listening to it for years.
Thank you. Not necessary to say that, by the way, to anybody calling. You know,
Out of all the shows, I learned the most from you.
Oh, thank you. So what's up?
And, I was telling, I guess Louise is the one that does the...
No, it's Danielle is answering the phone.
Danielle, okay. Danielle, I was
associate producer.
Her, you know, on the news all yesterday, you know, after the terrible events, and I'm not downplaying the events. It was terrible what happened. But I can't help but feel, can we really call what they were doing journalism in the traditional sense? Because the reason why I say that is, if people want to see what I mean, if they go to the Huffington Post or whatever sites I'm sure are out there, they'll show you the cartoons. A lot of them are, and no matter what they are, they're offensive, and they actually kind of come off racist, at least the ones of the Arabs and sure. of the Jews. It just seems like...
Right, which brings us back to, you know, the NAACP, or excuse me, the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, saying that when Nazis want to march through Skokie, Illinois, and this was back in the 60s, it was a community that was not only largely Jewish, it was mostly Holocaust survivors, and the Nazis wanted to march through there carrying the Nazi flag. The ACLU took this, as I recall, to the Supreme Court, or at least they made a big deal about it, saying, we defend the right of the Nazis to have offensive speech. If we don't allow all speech in the United States, Daniel, we don't have a country anymore. We don't. We have abandoned our founding principles.
I hear that in that argument, but I can't help but feel like they knew what they were doing was offensive enough that they bombed their business.
That's right. They had a security guard, and you know, clearly they didn't have enough security for what they were doing, and Salman Rushdie has had enough security. He's been on that same death list for a long, long time, for decades. And you know, there's like I don't disagree with Mike Papantonio that there's a big problem in Islam. I think that there are big problems in all religions, and not just the three monotheistic religions. You've got problems in Hinduism that are being exacerbated by Modi in India right now. He's using religion to split his country up in ways. You've got religious problems in Buddhism that are being played out in Myanmar and in some of the other Southeast Asian countries where you've got radical Buddhists who are killing people. I mean, all of these things, I think, are worthy of being called out. Daniel, thank you for the call. We have to say that one of our founding principles is anybody can say anything they want. And now, yeah, you have to deal with the consequences of what you say, but you should have the right to say it. And the consequences should not be that you get killed. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Interesting. It appears that as we speak, the Pope is speaking about this. If he says something interesting, and then David Cameron is talking about it, I'll get back with you. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Annie watching Free Speech TV in Boise, Idaho. Hey, Annie, what's on your mind?
Hi. Thank you for your show, by the way.
Sure.
Per Mr. Papantonio's comments, it's my belief, and I've been waiting for somebody forever to say this in defense of Bill Maher, I believe that Mr. Maher received the backlash that he did because he failed to draw the distinction between ideology and religion. In cultures where religion informs the organization of society, I think it becomes fair if that organization is violent or abusive and or cruel or sexist and not that it is in Islam necessarily all the time, but doesn't it not become fair to criticize those whatever barbarism may exist in whatever religion is informing the organization?
It becomes not just fair, Annie. Right. It becomes our obligation.
Okay.
I agree with Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence. You know, it's like when government is not meeting the needs of the people, it's the duty of the people to overthrow that government. And if the government is a theocracy, it's the duty of the people to challenge the theocracy. And if that means challenging the religion, so be it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you very much. Mark in Chester, Connecticut. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, I've been listening, and I truly believe in free speech. But in thinking about all the discussion this morning, you know, all the oppression, the putting leaders in place, especially that France has done, the colonialism, you know, it's kind of like just spitting in their face constantly. Take away their culture, take away all that colonialism has done, and put them under the thumb or under the boot, and then constantly ridicule. And as just like bullying, we don't want bullying, and there's laws being presented about cyberbullying and bullying in schools. We've seen kids commit suicide or, you know, kill or attempt to kill their schoolmates. So, you know, it should be an awakening to a bigger reality than just the freedom of speech. You know, they're under so much, you know, and I'm not siding with them, and no violence should be committed under any reason.
Here's one thing to consider, Mark. Mm-hmm. There's almost 2 billion Muslims in the world. They're only a relatively large fraction of them are in the Middle East. And it's not Muslims out of Indonesia or Malaysia or Australia or Canada, you know, who are doing this kind of stuff. It's Muslims from countries that have oil. Now, do you think it might have something to do with the fact that we've been messing in their business for a century to get their oil?
That's just my point.
Oh, okay. So we're saying the same thing. Yeah. And I don't think you can disentangle those and simply criticize Islam or these particular Muslims. You have to put it in context. And that was my problem with Bill Maher's comments.
Exactly. I mean, you have to take the history of the treatment of, you know, what's happened to the people of those regions. You know, this is a French company, and these are French, ex-Algiers, in their history.
These killers, and, yeah. Yeah, and Algeria was trashed by France for a half a century or more. You know, actually probably more than a century when it was a colonial power. Excellent point, Mark. Thank you for the call. We'll be back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. It was Robert Mapplethorpe who was the artist who did the upside-down crucifix in the glass of urine or in the jar, mason jar of urine that was horrified. So, you know, Rudy Giuliani in particular, as I recall, when he was mayor of New York City. But anyway, Bob Ney is on the line with us with the Talk Radio News Service brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com and free-don.org. And hello, Bob. Hello, Congressman.
I almost got thrown out of a party over that Mapplethorpe exhibition in Cincinnati.
Really? When was that? Do you remember?
I was a state senator, so around 19, I want to say, 88 or 89.
Yeah, yeah.
But the prosecutor in Cincinnati went after the whole exhibit, and it made the arts people pretty angry. I went down to a reception at the Arts Center, and they were all staring at me. Well, it was Arthur Ney was the prosecutor, and people thought he was my father. So
yeah,
it was
interesting.
Kind of uncomfortable time.
Very interesting.
Tom, I've been watching right prior to your show, House Resolution 19. They're moving what's called the previous question, which is a formality to get rid of the debate and move on to the issue. House Resolution 19 provides for this debate, which is going to occur as we speak, on the two things in the House, the Keystone Pipeline, and then it will move on to the 30-hour threshold for classification for a full-time employee,
mm-hmm.
the Obamacare, and which, of course, both will be vetoed. There's this kind of wish list that I was reading some little bit of research on of a, quote, override possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And this was for the Congress looking at the fact, can they count the votes to actually override in the Senate if the president vetoes it?
Right. And if the president vetoes a bill, it has to be overridden by a two-thirds majority in just the Senate or in both the House and the Senate?
It would have to be, well, it would have to be both, because they need that veto override.
That was my recollection.
Yeah, and
so in the Senate, I understand that they've got, you know, for Keystone XL, they've got six or seven Democrats who are with them, so they've got a filibuster-proof majority. I don't know if it's veto-proof, though, because a filibuster is 60 votes, a veto is 66 votes.
They would have to really, I don't know, do something unimaginable to be able to get the override. So it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I think the 30-hour work week, which is even more interesting in the sense that it is a bill which the Republicans, and we talked about this on your show before, but the Republicans are coming out of the box with all these things on opening day, and they're coming with a bill that even the conservative think tank people who do not like the health care bill at all have been making phone calls to leadership saying, what are you doing this for?
Yeah, and might that be because of the law of unintended consequences? In other words, if they say that a full-time job is 40 hours rather than 30 hours, then might that... No, actually, that would be the other way around, wouldn't it? Not only would that make fewer people eligible for Obamacare, it might also make fewer people eligible for all kinds of workplace protections.
Oh, that's correct. And this is purely designed by the Republicans, of course, to aid people in the corporations not to have to cover people with health care. Because
right.
it was, you know, if you worked 31 hours, you were a full-time employee under the president's bill and you got coverage.
Right.
But what it does, though, it is going to throw a lot of people out into the exchange, which will cost anywhere from, let's say, $60 billion to $75 billion. So the Republicans actually will be adding to the costs in the exchange. And that's where the conservatives are saying, you know, what are you trying to do here?
Yeah.
So it's not a very well-conceived bill, but it will head, you know, obviously over to the president. The one thing I wanted to mention, if I could, Tom, because I think this is very, very interesting, is the fact that on the French situation, you know, of course, the president sent his sympathies, as did Secretary of State Kerry, in fact, did it in French, which I thought was a great touch. But in two other reactions, which I think are notable to point out.
Okay.
The quote from Senator Bob Corker, who's the, you know, the top guy, Republican from Tennessee, chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Here's his quote. To me, Congress having oversight certainly is important. Now, this is on the French situation. But what is more important relative to these types of events is ensuring we don't overly hamstring the NSA's ability to collect this kind of information in advance and keep these kinds of activities from occurring. The second quote is by Senator Lindsey Graham, of course, Republican from South Carolina. Quote, I fear our intelligence capabilities, those designed to prevent such an attack from taking place on our shores, are quickly eroding. Now, the reason I mention these two and these quotes is the fact that, you know, let no good, scary situation go unused in the government.
Mm.
So here are two people broad brush stereotyping, giving, you know, the thought in the mind that if we just beef up our intelligence, let the CIA do what it pleases, you know, record more people beyond this conversation you and I are having right now by the NSA, then we could have potentially, you know, staved off an attack like this, or we could stave off an attack. And to dovetail that, the CIA announces, which I found quite fascinating, that they are now scanning through records to see a potential people that could do this in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we already have lists of potential people. So I just kind of wanted to put it out on the radar screen. Some of these comments are not necessarily, you know, towards the sympathy for the French as much as it's towards building a just cause to have further intelligence maneuvers and bills.
So basically, the military-industrial intelligence complex is using this attack in France as an excuse to amp up their own prestige, power, and reach.
Absolutely.
And budget.
And this will help go contrary to Senator Feinstein, who's seen light of day now on, you know, doing something about the rogue intelligence situation and the torture.
Right.
I mean, this just fits into them being...
They're going to try and use this to put her back in a box.
Right. And yeah. And the timing of this. And so, you know, I predict that as the next month or so goes on and more stories unravel, because we had a second shooting, obviously, in France that is a... It's been deemed a terrorist attack. And you're going to see more of the calls of, let's not go backwards. You know, we could prevent this. We could have prevented that. And we need to beef our intelligence up versus going backwards.
Amazing. Amazing. Bob Ney, Congressman, it's always great having you with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. And be sure to check out Bob's book, Sideswiped. It's brilliant. You want to know all about the crimes of John Boehner, how Washington really works. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
6 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, you just have to, I think one of the things that Americans are not particularly good at is putting ourselves in other people's shoes. And part of that is that most Americans haven't traveled around the world. In fact, I think, you know, fewer than 5% of Americans have a passport. Fewer than 3% of Americans have ever been outside the United States, if you don't include Canada or Mexico. And we just don't really have a sense of how other people live, how other people think, what other circumstances of life might be like. But you have to wonder, if you were a, pick a Christian religion, right? If you were a Southern Baptist, and people who represented another religion, as well as another arguably race, in quote, at least, you know, looking different than you, say it was Catholics from Mexico. It would be better if it was somebody who wasn't even Christian. But let's say that the Catholics from Mexico had invaded the United States. And you had several members of your family who had been killed by those Catholics. Other members had been tortured and, in your mind, falsely imprisoned. If the town that you live in had been partially blown up by the Catholics from Mexico, and then they come marching into your town, what would you do? Might you not pick up a gun and say no? Might you want to? I'm not saying that you probably necessarily would, but might you consider going down to Mexico where all those Catholics are living and saying, hey, you know, I'm forgetting the old cliche, something for a something. But in any case, it's, you know, here's your payback, buddy. And start blowing up churches. Or, I mean, I'm not trying to justify this at all. That said, however, And this is where I think, you know, simplistic blaming of Muslims for violence by Muslims is about as stupid as blaming all black people in America because a half a dozen African Americans busted into a bunch of stores in Ferguson, Missouri a month ago. If you don't take into consideration the context of people's outrage and you merely respond to their outrage without context, but with simple condemnation or even violence, the outrage persists. In fact, the outrage gets worse. How would we respond if Canada invaded the United States? How would we respond if Saudi Arabia invaded the United States? They've got the second largest military in the world. How would we respond? I suspect a lot of people who are just average folks would be, you know, particularly if our country was occupied, if our government had been torn down and destroyed, if our Congress had been dissolved, if our president had been put to death. This is all the stuff that happened in Iraq. If everything had been taken apart, if half the economy had been disposed of, if the country was covered in toxic and depleted uranium and our birth defect levels was exploding through the sky, might we not have some people who are, I'm astonished, frankly, that there's, I'm not astonished, I'm actually gratified that there's not more Iraqis seeking out revenge against the United States for what we have done there. I think a lot of them get it, you know, that their original government was fairly corrupt and their subsequent governments have been fairly corrupt. But it's like, we really have to understand what's going on here. That there is a backstory to what happened. Now, the flip side of that is, you know, Charlie Hebdo, I mean, satire is one of the most important, in my opinion, one of the most important forms of journalism. And Charlie Hebdo, I mean, this magazine used to be called Harry Carey or Hari Kar or something like that. And when one of the French presidents, I think it was Charles de Gaulle, this is back in the 60s when he died, they trashed him satirically during his funeral. And there was so much outrage among the French that they changed their name to Charlie Hebdo. But they continued satire. You want to know how important satire is? You know what the most well-known satire outlet in the United States is right now? It's The Daily Show. That's what Jon Stewart does, is satire. It's not comedy. It's satire. I mean, it's a subset of comedy. But it's comedy with a political edge or with a sociological edge. And so arguably, you've got this collision that just happened between one of the most important forms of political commentary, satire, Charlie Hebdo, on the one hand, and people who feel that they have a long-term grievance at the hands of the French government. I mean, the way that the France treated Algeria, blah, 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 blah. As I said, you know, one of these two guys, these two brothers, apparently who shot up the cartoonist group, tried to go to Iraq in 2007 because he saw the pictures from Abu Ghraib. None of this is to justify anything on either side. Please don't simplistically boil down what I'm saying to one bumper sticker or the other. What I'm saying is that this issue, if we respond to it the way we responded to 9/11 with simplistic bumper stickers and who can we bomb, if France responds to it that way, or if the United States does for that matter, it will make it worse. Which is not to say, oh, we need to feel so sorry for those terrorists. No, obviously. These people are killers. They should be in prison for the rest of their lives. They deserve the punishment I'm sure they'll get when the French get them. But if we want to respond in a way that is going to heal the situation rather than make the situation worse, we need to be looking at the historic grievances, which are ongoing in the Muslim world, as well as the, I mean, right now you've got French people who are, you know, bombing and shooting mosques, three of them last night. You've got to look at the historic concerns. You know, I mean, this is, in a way, this is France shooting itself in the foot by being a colonial power and having Algeria and Morocco and all these other countries in Northern Africa, where they were basically just extracting free or cheap labor and natural resources, ripping it off so that the Palace of Versailles could be built, so that the French could live a high life. And, you know, this is coming home to haunt them, too. It's like, we have to understand it in context.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And that's something that Americans don't do well either. We really, really, really like bumper stickers. Welcome back. David in Canterbury, Connecticut. Hey, David. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
You bet, Tom. Listen, after hearing Bob Nye's comment, quote from Lindsey Graham, I had to dive under my bed to call you.
Oh, really?
That's the Republicans.
Yeah, yeah. Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Yeah, oh, be very afraid. Yeah. I like this. I love the show, Tom. In fact, I tell many, many people I see to listen and to watch. And I know you've picked
Thank
up some
you.
Viewers. Because more people need to watch this stuff and listen to it. But I love the conversation today. And I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the big picture you're talking about. And, Tom, I'd like to see an end somewhere to all this nastiness in the world. I mean, is that realistic? I mean, at some point, when people fight, there has to be a dialogue to end that fight. I don't even see that dialogue ever coming in my lifetime, Tom. We bomb a country, then there's a terrorist attack, and then we do some drones, and then there's a terrorist attack. It's unbelievable, Tom, that Americans, I think, in order for us to even begin to think about having a dialogue with Middle Eastern groups, is that we have to have a dialogue with ourselves, Tom. We have to have some reconciliation about, say, the sanctions in Iraq, even before the bombing started, caused the deaths of 300,000 babies, children.
500, yeah, half a million, I think, is the more accepted number.
Tom, that's horrendous. Why no tears? Why no tears in America, Tom?
Yeah.
I don't get it. And people wonder why these acts happen.
Yeah. Good point, David. Good point.
We need to reconcile this amongst ourselves, and then maybe we can have a conversation around the world to sort of end this madness. And until then, Tom, it just seems so hopeless.
I am not hopeless at all, David. But I do acknowledge that it's going to be a real tough road to hoe here, and we have to be approaching it with something more than, you know, you are bad, we're going to throw a bomb at you.
Right.
You know? I mean,
Tom,
it's just
the average drone strike. I read this somewhere the other day. The average drone strike kills 13 civilians.
Wow.
I mean, what's up with that? Don't you think these people notice that stuff?
Yeah.
We have no tears, Tom, because we never count their dead. We only count our dead. And it's always been that way in our wars. We count Americans dead because the other people don't count.
Yeah.
And until we can reconcile that, Tom, we're going to just keep killing people, and they're going to keep killing us.
Yeah. That said, though, in the context of Charlie Hebdo, we must absolutely stand behind the principle that free speech is free speech and that satire is important thus protected free speech.
I get that. You remember Guido Sarducci?
Oh, yeah.
Find the Pope in the pizza?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, my friend Jerry was a friend of his. I don't know if he's still around. I'm guessing
Sinead O'Connor and Lou Reed, how they lampooned the Pope
Pontiff, pretty Pontiff, you know. So.
Oh, and it almost ended Sinead O'Connor's career, and in fact, arguably, you know, reduced it by more than half of what it would have been because she's such a brilliant singer.
I loved it, but nobody died, Tom, and I get that.
Yeah.
We need that.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's
thank you very much.
You're welcome, David. Thank you very much. And that's an important point, is that you know, when Sinead O'Connor offended the Pope and Catholics all over the world, nobody tried to kill her. And or when Robert Mapplethorpe put the upside down Christ in urine, to the best of my knowledge, nobody tried to kill her. Him, excuse me. But that said, it's been a long time since Christians or Catholics have had other countries or other people killing hundreds of thousands or even millions of their citizens because of their religion. So, 20 minutes past the hour. You'll recall that after 9/11, Bill Maher went on the air on ABC. He had a syndicated program. Politically Incorrect is my recollection of the name of his program, went on the air and said that at least the 9/11 bombers had courage. I believe that was the word he used, or weren't cowards or whatever, because they were willing to die for their cause, right, as opposed to people who, you know, kill people and then, you know, run away and hide. And he lost his show over that. And it's, you know, I'm thinking of that in the context of the conversation that we're having and some of the comments that I've been making, suggesting that there is a train of events that started with Maggie Thatcher having a little war, Ronald Reagan having a little war to get reelected in both cases, or for political purposes in both cases, followed by George Herbert Walker Bush having a little war to try and get himself reelected in 92, the Iraq War, which set up much of what's going on right now. And, you know, somebody, I guarantee you, some right-winger is going to come along and say, oh, Hartman's trying to justify what the killers did. You know, he's more concerned about the killers than he is about the magazine cartoonists. No. We are, you know, c'est juiz, Charlie. I don't know how to speak French, but I am Charlie also. We all are. And I frankly, cartoonists all over the world, not just cartoonists, everybody who holds free speech to be a high value must be supporting this magazine and must be mourning the loss of the people who published and wrote it, and condemning the people who killed them. There is no justification for that. None. That said, the people who committed those murders believe they have a justification. They genuinely believe they have a justification. And if we fail to understand what causes them to have that belief and how our own behavior is reinforcing that belief, then we are never going to solve this problem. And I guess that's the point that I wanted to make. Joe in Chevy Chase, Maryland. Hey, Joe, what's up? Joe?
Hi, yeah, thanks.
Hey.
Yes. I first of all, I want to stipulate, I don't think you're trying to make excuses for them, but I think the way some of us on the left analyze this thing, we do fall into the trap of trying to act like we have such an open mind that our brains fall out. Because the very same analysis that you just went through, that we have to try to understand where these people are coming from and how our actions have affected it, you hardly ever, if ever, hear that when some crazy right-wing Christian guy tries to blow up an abortion clinic. I mean, you don't see the...
Well, you don't hear that, Joe, because everybody knows where they're coming from. They think abortion is murder, and they think, therefore, they're justified in killing murderers. I mean,
But they don't go...
I don't have to take a college course to figure that out. But the fact of the matter is that most people don't know the history of the three generations of the Bush family and their involvement in the Middle East.
Well, and that's another point. I mean, it just shows how our own biases taint our, quote, open-mindedness. Because, I mean, my God, to, like, bring up Reagan and Bush and the same old MSNBC and DNC talking points about, you know, how everything is America's fault and that we are somehow partially responsible for this behavior, it's just, you know, it's absurd. It's laughable. I mean, it comes across, you know, you talked about the offensive part.
So, Joe, are you trying to tell me that if Abu Ghraib had not happened, that this guy would still, this killer, this stone-cold killer who deserves whatever he gets, the guy who was shooting up the Charlie Hebdo headquarters, that this guy wouldn't have tried to go to Iraq, wouldn't have ended up radicalized?
I have no idea.
But you're willing to say that this is a tired MSNBC talking point? I mean, what do you work for, Fox News or something?
I see. I knew you were going to say that. You think a trump card of everything is Fox News. If you can't logically discuss the point, here you come out with your.
No, I'm saying that your point is not logical.
It is logical. Well, okay. Well, how is it not logical?
You're saying that considering why something happened is somehow justifying it, and I'm not saying that at all. And you're trying to suggest that not only do I say that, but liberals say that, MSNBC says that, and that is a Fox talking point, Fox News, which is wrong with their facts more than half the time, according to MediaMatters.org.
It's not what I'm saying. So stop.
It's what you said just a minute ago.
No, it isn't.
Okay,
no, it isn't.
Joe, we're going around in circles. Demetrius in Northbrook, Illinois. Hey, Demetrius, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Listen, I disagree with you on the satire. It's not helping anything anywhere around the world. It's not doing anything for anything. Yeah, people have a right to say what they want, but let me tell you something. I'm a musician, and I know black people, and they don't trust you any more than they trust the right wing, believe me. They don't even trust the liberals because they're not getting anything from the liberals. But a black guy said something to me. He says, it's amazing. He says the United States are killing Muslims for what? What are we killing innocent children for? Children,
right.
Mothers, daughters, husbands for 60 years. What have we been doing it for?
We're doing it for oil, Demetrius.
No, let me finish. For money.
Yeah.
We're killing innocent people for money, and you're telling the black guy that this guy can't kill somebody for his religion, for someone knocking his religion. We're killing people. For six decades, for money. And you're sitting there telling me an Arab doesn't have a right to kill somebody for what he believes is important?
That's a tough one. Demetrius, thanks for the call. It's a tough one. This is the point that I made earlier. You know, if Canada had invaded the United States and disbanded Congress and killed the president, would you or I be out on the street with a rifle trying to send away, you know, trying to take out the Canadian soldiers?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
But here's the problem. To even have that conversation in the context of the murder at the headquarters of a satire magazine is really, really, really cutting the edge. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 28 minutes before the hour. And Joe in Chino, California. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hi. I was going to say, if we are going to criticize the speaker in the French cartoon, and that speech is going to be squashed, then we are going to encourage violence as a means to stifling speech under every circumstance.
Well, in fact, let me take it a step beyond that. Huffington Post is reporting that the Associated Press just took down images of the, I think Serrano was his name, the artist or Cerro, who did it was called Piss Christ in 1987, Andres Serrano. And they used to have the image up AP available, and now since this shooting, they've taken it down. They're saying, we're not putting offensive pictures up. And they blur out the Muhammad cartoons and things. It's like we're already starting to crawl backwards.
We're stalled.
It concerns me. Pardon?
But we shouldn't go to self-censorship.
No, no, I absolutely agree. I absolutely agree.
And how we the speech, we should defend the right of the speaker to say it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm totally with you. And if there's any way that I can buy a copy of Charlie Hebdo when it comes out, they're printing a million copies, I will do that. And you know, I'm guessing a lot of people all around the world are going to be doing that. We have to defend free speech, period. Thank you, Joe, for the call. Mark in Chicago. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Tom. I think, you know, one thing that Americans don't realize, or, you know, they don't, or, you know, they don't realize the context in France, that France having a large Muslim and Arab immigrant population, you know,
20% of the French population is Muslim.
Right.
And many of them have Algerian ancestry, as these shooters did. These apparent alleged shooters, or Moroccan ancestry, or, you know, from other countries in the region that were under the thumb of the French for centuries, or for years, or decades, or I don't know how long France was a colonial power. I'm assuming it was centuries.
Right, and there's quite a lot of racism against that immigrant population in France.
Yes, so, and in fact, there's a political party devoted to it. It's the Le Pen Party, or, you know, what do they call it? It's not the National Front. That's in Golden Dawn is in Greece. What is the Marie Le Pen's party? Is it the National Front?
It was the National Front.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And go ahead.
Right. So I don't know. So given that context, you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, sure, like the Nazis have the right to march in Skokie, but you know, that doesn't mean we have to like the Nazis. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it's a little bit of in the purely abstract, sure, they have the right to say what they want, but I mean, it's a little provocative to do what they did. I mean, they could have, you know, I don't know what they expect to happen. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, and the Nazis didn't shoot anybody in Skokie. Actually, they ultimately didn't even march in Skokie. You know,
well, the Nazis were provocateurs in that case.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So, yeah,
yep. Very interesting, Mark. Thanks for sharing your thoughts on it, Josh in South Pasadena, California. Hey, Josh, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I've called it a bunch of times, and I'm definitely I think you're great. I love your show.
But
I happen to be along with you on your geopolitical view. You know that these things happen for a reason, and you could say the same thing for, you know, Vietnam, for lots of different situations. But you're kind of creating a false equivalency, and I know you're saying you're not justifying it. But by going way out of your way to explain it, you partially are, because there is no equivalency with any other group here. Like, the Germans dominated Europe for 50 years, and there is not a, you know, bombing of like German families, or, you know, saying, you know, "Vive la France" while you bomb a German family.
No, actually, there was. It was called World War One. World War One was what set up World War Two, and the Germans
felt like they
were victims because of the Treaty of Versailles.
No, I understand that. That's what I'm saying. For 50 years, Germany just trounced all of Europe. They did it twice, and they killed 6 million Jews, of which I have family that was in the Holocaust. However, you don't see the Jews going back to Germany and blowing up people, or if, you know, they're, you know, Seth MacFarlane and South Park, they make fun of Jesus all the time.
Right.
You can't draw that same equivalency of the, and you just brought up the Pope and Sinead O'Connor. This
right.
doesn't happen that way. And
right.
you can't just keep saying, well, because it happens in history, that it's somehow explained, because you can keep going back farther in history. Guess who invaded France first? It wasn't France invading
North
Africa invading France.
Well, if you want to go back 3,000 years, it was
yeah,
the Celts.
Yeah, you can keep going. You can keep going. The point is, you can't just keep going back in time to explain everything. The point is, we are civilized. We're supposed to be a civilized generation. We can't just make explanations for everybody who bombs people and who kills people. They got what was coming. They're going to.
Josh, you're taking the wrong message from what I'm saying. I'm not saying that here is why these guys did this, and therefore blank, right? They're absent of context. What I'm
right.
saying is
Do
that what I'm. Let me finish the sentence here. What I'm saying is that here's why these guys did this, and if we keep making the same mistakes with our foreign policy, we are going to keep getting the same result.
I agree with you. That would make sense if it was Vietnam terrorists coming after us and things like that, but it's not. You can't say anything about Muhammad. This is not necessarily a geopolitical issue. This is a very specific religious issue that it's not – doesn't have, and you said it happens only in the countries that have oil. No, it happens in Chechnya. It's very frequent in Indonesia. It's very frequent in England, in France. These are not just from people who are coming from countries that have oil. These are people who are born in those countries.
So what do we do?
Well, the first thing we do is don't try to make an explanation for psychopathic behavior. These are people who should have no excuse. We shouldn't try to justify it. And just like you said before, we shouldn't try to put this into context so that people.
I don't believe, Josh, that I am providing them with an excuse. What I'm pointing out is that there's this series of events that have happened that have radicalized Muslims. And most of them have been all about the West, principally the United States and American-based oil companies, trying to get oil resources out of the Middle East. And we have radicalized Muslims. And then we're standing around going, oh, my God, radicalized Muslims. They're horrible people.
Well, I agree with you on that one. I'm with you on that one. I just think it's when terrible things happen like this, it seems a little bit untimely to try to explain.
Well, that was my point at the last break, was that, you know, having this conversation the day after a horrible murder is really the knife's edge. And
right.
You know, maybe I should have waited a week to talk about it. But, you know, what the heck? This is what's here and it's what's so. And I think if we don't look at this timeline that starts out with in large part that, I mean, we could take the timeline back to the 19th century, where, you know, the Wahhabists were being supported by the Saudi family in part because of encouragement from the United States, late 19th, early 20th century. Actually, it was the 1860s when the Wahhabists first were cutting the deals with the Saudi royal family. If we don't go back and look at this history, we are doomed to repeat this stuff, as awful as it is. It's not justification. It's just what's so. Just like I think this is very similar to saying, and I really believe you can legitimately say this, and I'm a reasonably good student of German history, or at least modern German history, the 20th century German history, having lived in Germany for a year and having, you know, read everything I could find out about it and written the first draft of a book about the religion of the Nazis, that had the Treaty of Versailles not been punitive as it was, that World War II never would have happened and Hitler never would have happened. That the Treaty of Versailles, which basically demanded these massive war reparations of Germany who lost World War I, or was perceived or was identified as the aggressor in World War I, that you know, when that happened, John Maynard Keynes came out and said, if this treaty is signed, and this was back in, you know, 1918, 1920, whenever it was, whenever the treaty was signed. He said, if this treaty is signed, it is going to cause a Second World War. And he was absolutely right. And I'm saying, if we continue the process of occupying Arab countries, drone striking Arab countries, moving our oil companies into Arab countries to get their oil out of there, we're going to continue to have these kind of problems. That's not making excuses.
Right.
I'm not making excuses for Hitler. But John Maynard Keynes predicted him.
Right, but what I'm saying here is, and I love like almost everything you said, except for there's just a little bit of a false equivalency. I know that all those things are true, and yet there is no free speech. There's no satire, and with Islam, there is none. There's always going to be that.
That's Islam's problem. I mean, you've got a lot of countries where life is hell. You know, they visit Mugabe's, you know, there's a lot of countries where life is hell. It's when they start exporting that hell to us that it becomes our concern. And typically, they only export that hell to us when we're the ones who help create life is hell for them. That's my point. Anyhow, Josh, I understand what you're saying, and I hope that nobody is construing what I'm saying as any kind of justification for what these whack jobs did yesterday, because there is none.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
That said, what's the old saying? Those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it. Stick around. Welcome back. Liz, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Columbia, Missouri. Hey, Liz, what's up? What's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call, and Happy New Year.
Thank you.
I agree with so much of what you're saying, and talking about satire in particular. We have our Bill of Rights, and the First Amendment protects speech no matter how ugly it gets for a reason. Similarly, no matter how heinous a crime one might commit, we have the right to representation and to a fair trial. All these Bill of Rights are to protect not the easy stuff, like when I say, oh, I like ice cream. Well, no one disagrees with that. But, when I say something about Muhammad or about Jesus or about and people are offended, I have the right to say that. Now, they may have the right to shun me. My boss may have the right to fire me, but no one has the right to assault me or kill me, and the government does not have the right to do anything to me either.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Very, very well said. Thank you, Liz, for that. Diana in Agora Hills, California. Hey, Diana, what's up?
Hi there, Tom. I'm loving your show, and I love the fact that you're peeling back the many layers of this problem. People want to be so reductionist. It's annoying to me because human beings are complex. Human problems are extremely complex, and they're historical. So thank you first for that. And I just want to share that while I felt it was great that Western leaders, in particular David Cameron and President Obama, were out there supporting the French and, yes, supporting satire, as, of course, all of us do, the majority of us do, I'm hoping. When I was listening to David Cameron, I had a strange reaction. I felt there was a tremendous amount of hypocrisy. He's saying our basic core belief is free speech and we're not going to tolerate censorship and so on and so forth. And similarly, President Obama. But I was stunned at kind of my instinctive reaction at the hypocrisy, because he's kept Julian Assange imprisoned for over 4 years in the Ecuadorian embassy.
Well, wait a minute, Diana. I support Julian Assange. That said, Julian Assange arguably has broken U.S. laws, and that breaking laws is a different thing from free speech.
Julian Assange has broken U.S. laws?
I don't know, and I don't believe he did.
No,
that's why I said arguably. But
right.
The Obama administration believes that he did, and they would like to try him in a court of law, and that's how we do these things. They're not sending hitmen off to take him out, thank God.
But it's the level of hypocrisy, the James Risen situation. Also, my point is,
he was on his show two weeks ago.
Exactly, that they're criminalizing journalism and censoring journalism in their fashion. They're not killing people, yes, but
yeah, I'm not sure that Assange is the best example of that. But I think that when the Piss Christ pictures get taken down from AP, as they apparently were in the last 24 hours, as like, oh, we're not going to offend anybody's religion anymore. It's like, that's when I start to worry.
Well, all
that's not
forms
government.
Of criminalizing journalism and censorship with regard to journalism and art, whether it's satire or Piss Christ, it's all offensive to me.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's offensive, but it should not be criminalized. Diana, thank you for the call. Although Rudy Giuliani tried his best. He really tried his best. We'll be back with Senator Sherrod Brown right after this. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's take a deep breath and move off topic here. Because there's really important stuff happening in the Capitol building a couple of blocks from here. Senator Sherrod Brown on the line with us. Brown.senate.gov is website. Senator, welcome back.
Good to be back. Thanks.
Thank
Tom.
You.
I like how when I call in a little early and I hear your show, and the discussion is always really substantive. And I don't say that about every show, so thank you.
Well, thank you for your kind words. We've been really struggling with all the various dimensions of this issue for 2.5 hours here. It's been a fascinating conversation. You guys are struggling now it seems to me, the fact that the Republicans in the House of Representatives changed the rules by which that body works so that it's going to make it very, very difficult to expand or help or even maintain Social Security. It's only going to make it easy to cut it. Do I have that right?
Yeah, a couple of things. First, yes, you have that right. Second, the Republicans never really liked social insurance. I mean, it's their philosophy, and I'm fine with that. That's their philosophy. I don't think it makes them immoral. I think it just makes them wrong. But they've never really liked Medicare. They've never really liked Social Security. They've really never liked unemployment insurance. Social insurance, you pay money in, and when you need it, you get assistance from the government. If you kind of look at history, you see, as you do so well in the show, you see that on the key votes and the creation of most of those programs, Republicans generally in large numbers, and that's before the party was conservative as it is now, said no to that. So their lesson is they know they can't directly go after privatization of Social Security. They tried that with President Bush. They got burned. They knew it didn't work politically. So they're now going after disability insurance by enacting sort of an obscure House rule to do it. And when you think about that, Social Security, they won't go after directly Social Security because that's people's parents and grandparents. But they'll go after disability because that's a bunch of working stiffs that are trying to game the system. I mean, that's how they
in their mind.
It.
Yeah.
In their minds.
I would add to that, they go after the unemployed. They go after poor people because, by and large, the unemployed and poor people don't have the means to be seriously politically active.
Right, right.
And the same is true, I would guess, of disabled people.
I think that's right. And even among them, I mean, someone just told me a story that their daughter is profoundly disabled, and this is a friend of theirs. They're talking about a friend of theirs, and their daughter gets government help for disability. But she looks down on other people to get it because they're not worthy like her daughter. I mean, so even within people that are on disability, they just believe that it's people are of two minds. I mean, the Republicans have effectively, and we've got to fight back better, demonize people that don't have much privilege, people that are down and out for whatever reason, whether it's a disability, whether it's laid off, whether it's they're old and poor and they have low wage jobs. I mean, and that's what this fight's going to be. But for us, it's a direct attack on Social Security. It's a direct attack on benefits for Social Security, and we're going to sell to the public that way. And we're going to force the issue as they continue to go after these social insurance programs. They try to voucherize Medicare. They want to privatize as much of Social Security as they can get away with. Any one of those issues.
Yeah. To what extent are the Senate rules being changed by Mitch McConnell to comport with these new House rules? And is the solution to this legislative, or is it changing the rules again?
The solution is we need to do something legislative. In a nutshell, the Social Security, there are primarily two funds in Social Security. There's the retirement fund that people are the most familiar with. Then there's a disability fund. When one tends to run short over time, and it can go either way, the Congress passes a bill and they move the money within the system. We don't raise lower benefits or raise payments. We just move the money. This was last moved a number of years ago. And it was predicted that in 2016 we'd need to do it again to make an adjustment. Congress has done it 11 times, I believe, over the last 60 years, something like that. It made that adjustment. It's always nonpartisan, just like minimum wage has been bipartisan, just like a transportation bill is bipartisan. But these guys don't want to do that, so they want to force the issue of cuts in Social Security. And we're going to highlight what they're trying to do by this little sleight of hand changing the rules. I don't think they'll try to. I don't know if they'll try to change the rules in the Senate. They're going to need likely 60 votes to make that rule change. And if they try to do it with fewer, I think they're going to pay a price.
Yeah. So a rule change in the Senate can be subject to a filibuster?
Not clear.
Yeah.
We changed. we did it with 50 votes on confirmations.
Yeah, you're right.
We can't do it legislatively. I'm not clear on that. I don't know if the parliamentarian's clear or not on that. I don't think there's been a ruling specifically on this, but we will watch.
But this is still, even if it's just done in the House, all spending legislation has to originate in the House. It's still creating the zeitgeist, the frame, the times within which they're going to. When do you expect the Republicans to actually now act on trying to start dialing back Social Security disability insurance?
Well, I think they will. In some sense, they don't have to act because when the money runs out on the disability, which it will, and they're going to say it ran out because of abuses. And they're going to point out that a lot more people are on disability now. But the reason for that is when somebody's is eligible for disability, they keep working just because they want to and they make a little more money. But then when they lose their jobs, they're going to file for disability then.
Sure.
Even though they'd rather work. And the Republicans chalk that up to people gaming the system and being lazy. I don't, and I'm sure you don't. So
what they're going to do is they're just going to say, sorry, there's no more money, no more checks get cut.
Say, if you want to restore these benefits to them, you're going to have to cut something else. Or they could say under the House rules, you're going to increase taxes to do that. But you know they won't do that.
Right.
So
that's
the conundrum we face. But that comes of its own accord because of the depletion of that part of the fund. And to fix it, they said we could just move money over. They won't do that, apparently.
Amazing. Senator Sherrod Brown, you're doing God's work, sir. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks to you, too. Thanks.
Brown.Senate.gov is the website. And thanks so much for being with us today. These 3 hours and engaging me, challenging me at times in a fascinating conversation about, I think, one of the most important issues of our day. And don't forget, democracy requires you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.